Okay, are we seeing... Isn't it weird? Isn't it weird? We were just talking
about... Knock,
knock. Beasley Penny Arcade.
Welcome, welcome. Hello, hello. Come on in. And you're in the Paisley Penny Arcade. Look around you. Can't you tell? It's a little bit strange. It's a little bit weird. But come on in. There's nothing to fear. Well, I had to rhyme it, didn't I? How are you doing? Welcome. I'm Mo Abdelbaki. Today is Wednesday, the 26th of February. February. And that it is, the last Wednesday in February 2025. Come on in, have a seat. There are beanbag chairs everywhere. Well, not everywhere, but there are a lot of them. Come on in, flop yourself down, relax a little bit. What a month it's been for me anyway, and it's getting better all the time. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Good album. Excellent album. When it came out in 1967, oh my goodness. And we were still listening to it in the 70s, you know. And yes, we were. It was like, hey, Mo, you want to come over and listen to Sgt. Pepper? Yeah, sure. That's fine with me. Okay. Yeah, I put egg cartons all over my room and painted them with black light paint. And we'll put the black light on, man. And we'll listen to Sgt. Pepper, okay? Okay. Far out. Okay. And that's what we did. That's what we did. That's what we did. Oh, my God. Did we do some strange things? Yeah, we did some strange things. We did weirder things than that. Oh, the tales I could tell of 1971, 72, 73, 74, 75. Oh, no, by 70. When did I get married? 70. I got married in something. And by then, everything kind of came to a screeching halt. It was like suddenly I had to be more human. And, yeah, because I have hair in the ponytail. Hair in the ponytail. And not flying everywhere. You know, my hair caught on fire several times. Because I smoked back then. I smoked a pipe, too. And pipes, you know, you light those things and use a lighter that goes into the pipe and it goes next to the hair and foomph. Never burned it all off. Yeah. I think I've told the story about how I was driving once and heard the car next to me beep, beep, beep. It was in the winter and the guy looks over at me and I look over and beeping and he's screaming, pointing at my... You know, pointing at his face. And I look over and my beard is crackling, you know, like a pleasant little fireplace. My beard was on fire and I patted it out and thanked him and thought, well, and you'd think I would have shaved the other side off. Did I? Why, no. I did not. I just left it that way. Kind of pulled out the burnt stuff and let it grow back in. And I had friends who said, Mo, why don't you just cut the other side off? I said, no. No, I don't do that, you know. And people say I'm not weird. I'm weird. I'm okay, though. That's just who I am. I know myself. The Oracle at Delphi, or Delphi, if you will. And two big mottos out front: Know Thyself and Everything in Moderation. Well, the first one I've got handled pretty well. The second one I have done in my past. And more or less now I do most things in moderation. And there was a third one below that's not so well known: No Spitting. It's a very little known fact. You know, the Greeks were great athletes. And if you've noticed, most athletes spit all the time. I had a great friend back in the day, and he would spit constantly. He was an incredible natural athlete. Baseball player, golfer, incredible golfer. He played with all the local celebrities. Everyone wanted to golf with him. He could have been a professional golfer, but he didn't want the life. He didn't want the traveling. He didn't want all that stuff. The guy was just sickening to do anything with. I had a dartboard in my basement, and I had darts, because I had fancied myself something of a dart player. And he told me he'd never played darts before, never thrown darts, as we say. And I said, "Really? You've never thrown darts before?" And he said, "No, let me try this." And thump, 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 you know, right in the bullseye three times. And I was like, "That's irritating." And he said, "Well, I just natural eye-hand coordination." And boy, did he have it. And he would spit constantly, not indoors, mind you, although I think he wanted to. He just, and his wife would say, "Come on now, stop spitting." And he just never would stop spitting. Boy, did he make a mean gin and tonic. Woo-hoo, neat, neat. Neat, neat. That's from Easy Rider, by the way. If you've ever seen the movie Easy Rider with Jack Nicholson and Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda. Quite a movie. I saw that movie back in the day. Once again, I think right around 1967. And then I moved to Louisiana, which is where the end takes place. Actually, a lot of the movie takes place in Louisiana. And I was paranoid. Paranoid, because the ending is not at all what you want to see when you're going to the very place where that happened. A friend of mine got a job. He was a future professor of astrophysics, and he was delivering 7-Up products, and he actually ended up delivering to that very cafe where they end up irritating people enough that they're going to shoot and kill them at the end. Hope that's not a spoiler for you if you haven't seen Easy Rider yet. But and he actually got to know these guys, and he didn't look like a hippie. He wasn't a hippie. He actually was a pretty good friend of mine until he disavowed me because I was an astrologer. You know, Mo, I know I lived with your family for quite a while, and I know you and I were friends for 3 or 4 years and all of that. And I knew you were an astrologer back in the day, and we shared a lot of incredible adventures, including getting absolutely hammered one night and calling Jimmy Carter on the phone and having the White House pick up and a Secret Service agent pick up the phone, and he knew where we were calling from, and that freaked us out. We went through a lot of those things, and yeah, I know we had this incredible past and a lot of fun, and I know all that, but guess what? Now I'm a professor, and I'm not going to allow myself to be associated with you anymore. So don't get in touch and have a lovely life. Friends, that's what it's been like. When you are on the fringe, it can be like that. So just, you know. So when you have a good friend, you know it. You know it. Not that he wasn't a good friend. At the time, he was a good friend. But some friends are better than others, you know. Like the friend I was just with out in the backyard throwing the ball. That's Coco Bean, who is our puppy, 10 months old, and does not know the rules of fetch, which is I throw the ball, you bring the ball back to me. So we have a two-ball game, which is, you know, they're both high option balls. They're high stakes balls. You can't use two balls that are of different value because it won't work. So they have to be equally high-value balls, and that's a very hard thing to do. So these are two balls that she values both the same, and that was hard to do. I can't even begin to tell you how complicated the game is. Finally got two balls of the same value, and toss one, and she goes and gets it. Then I have to toss another, and she goes after that one, brings one back, hoards it. Then I throw the other one because I've gone and gotten that one, and she gets a pretty good workout. Otherwise, it's like having Blackbeard the pirate in your house at night. You know, it's just not a lot of fun, but she gets pretty tired out in a fairly short period of time, and I have the fun of my life because she is a tremendous, tremendous being, and I love her to pieces, and, you know, I think she likes me back. She does. It's a lot of fun. So life is good. Life is good. I've discovered that. I've always known that. I've known that forever. But with the events of the past month, and that is the passing of one of my closest and dearest friends, 55 years, met him in band on my first day of high school, and bam-o, gone, you know, here today, gone tomorrow, and just, ripped my heart out. And I'm still dealing with it. I'm still trying to get my head around it. But the one thing I have realized is I've got life. There's a great song in the rock opera Hair, 1968. Yes, I was alive then. And it's called I've Got Life. It's one of my favorite songs from the play. I've never seen it performed, but I know the music inside and out because I used to listen to it every day. I'd go to the school library and put it on. Little did they know the words that were on that record, because if they had, they would have taken a nail to it the way the local radio station had the Steppenwolf album. We had a radio show on that station, and they had the Steppenwolf album, and they had Pusher, you know, the Pusher Man. They had taken a nail to that song because the words were, I don't think I can say it, but it was, you know, GD, the Pusher Man, you know. It's a great song. Great song. And you hear it on the radio now, but back at that time, you couldn't say certain words on the radio. Now you can hear almost anything, I guess, but I'm not going to say it because I don't know the rules here. But holy cannoli, it was really a time. And a song with a message. But the song is I've Got Life. Mother, I've got life, sister, I've got freedom, brother, I got good times, man. And I've always loved that song. And after Bill died, I kind of, see, before I had vertigo, a lot of vertigo, and it was bad, and I got some medication for it. My sister had the same thing, and she's very young. Well, she's younger than me, I should put it that way, but she's a wonderful human being. She's actually one of the best persons I've ever met in my life, and I've known her for a long time. Well, a long, long time. And she had the same thing. It's a family thing. And so otherwise the docs would have probably, dissected me by now, tried to put little probes in me, you know. And I said, she's on this stuff, and it helps her. And they said, oh, well, let's try this stuff. And then they, you know, one of the doctors, like, wanted to stand on the top of a cake and wave her arms and say, looky me. And I thought, that's not good, because you didn't, I told you this. But, you know, some people are like that, but God bless her anyway. So that helps. It takes care of it. But I still sometimes get a sudden little, whoa, what's that? And so there I was, and I thought, well, maybe I should have a cane. And I got kind of liking the cane, to be honest with you. It was like, oh, I'm old. I'm going to start carrying a cane. And I started carrying a cane. I found people were like kind of, oh, this old character is carrying a cane. And he's got this big old bushy white beard. And, I'm going to, like, let him walk in first, or I'm going to smile at him. And oh, this poor old guy, you know. And I kept thinking, well, hell, I've been on this planet a long time. I'm going to carry this cane. And I found out it kind of helped me when I had to walk a lot. Like, if you're going into the big box store, and it's like 30 miles to the front door, it feels that way. And you have to walk from one part of it to the other. And I thought, oh, well, this is kind of good. I'm lazy. And I found myself kind of getting into it, you know, and giving into it and giving into it more. And it's like, what am I doing? And I thought, well, I'm kind of entitled to this, aren't I? Am I entitled to this? And I really thought, well, why not? Why the heck not? So then, you know, kabong. And I found myself ditching it lately. After Bill died, I just ditched it. I said, man, I'm too young for this. I'll need it someday, more than likely. I mean, I've had gout. Actually, I've had to use a cane in the past because I had gout so bad. And they put me on statins for a while as an experiment. I'm surprised they didn't put bolts in my neck, you know, and wait for a thunderstorm to come by. You know, it's alive. It's alive. And you know, I just said, and I don't need, I mean, I'm walking fine. I feel great. I feel alive. Now, this may be a placebo effect, but I don't think so. I actually feel really good. I feel strong. I feel alive and peppy and up and kind of rejuvenated. And I think, what was I doing before? What was I doing before, and why was I doing it? And I'm like, okay, does a friend have to die to make me feel so alive? Is that what has to happen? I mean, it was a long year before. I mean, you know, this is, I was just out with Cocoa Bean, and what fun we had laughing. She was laughing at me. She always laughs at me. You know, you can tell when a dog's laughing at you. I'm sorry, you can just tell. And in turn, I turn around and laugh at her, and she gets her feelings hurt, and I never want to do that, so I give her a big hug. When I sit down on the deck, she comes down and shoves her head under my arm and just snuggles with me. I mean, for goodness sake. Isn't that love? That's love. Animals love us. They can love us. I love them right back, you know? I love love. There's a song in here called I Believe in Love. And it's a upbeat, perky, and it's sappy, and I love the song. And I love it all. I mean, hippies were cool. Don't let people tell you to make fun of hippies. Don't, because hippies were cool. And I was one, and I loved it. And people might have made fun of me. Oh, yeah, people made fun of me. And they still do make fun of me. And by the way, thank you, Erica. You are a love. You are a love. And you are a sweetheart, you know. And Mark, you are too. You are, for so many reasons, for letting me know that Erica was talking about me. That was very kind of you. And I listened. I went back and listened to the show. And she said some very nice things about me on her show on authenticity. And Anne, thank you. You know who you are. Well, you really do know who you are. And I think I know who I am. Do you know who you should know who you are? You know, and honesty is a good thing. Self-honesty. I've had to be self-honest about myself because I grew up who I am. And that's the point. We grow up who we are in this society. I grew up who I was in a society. I used to get beat up on the playground a lot because I wasn't one of them. I wasn't a Latino boy in a place where there were a lot of Latino boys. And I wasn't a normal kid, whatever normal means. And I had strange ideas because I had strange ideas. And at home, I wasn't, you know, easy to get along with all the time because I had strange ideas. So being who you are is the most important thing that you can do. Now, you don't always have to pipe up like I did. And I still pipe up. It's always like, Mo, shut up. Mo, in my mind, shut up, Mo, shut up, Mo, shut up, Mo. You know, the Oracle at Delphi. Let's talk about that. It was a fascinating place. And people took it really seriously. And do you know that it was, you know, what, you know, the Pythus was the priestess, well, priestess, quote unquote, because it was a hermaphrodite inside, and usually an albino hermaphrodite. Now, how hard is that to find? An albino hermaphrodite, right? And it's in this place where the god Apollo supposedly slew this giant snake, hence the term. And the term python, by the way, comes from the term smell, this horrible smell, because it rotted in there. And that smell, probably a sulfur cave. I think they've decided that's what it was. And the smell from there, they put this... It was like a sulfur spring, and they'd put a tripod over this gaseous area, and they'd put this hermaphroditic, which was sacred to Hermes, right? And they put this over this tripod over it, and they'd put this hermaphroditic albino over that, the priestess, priest, whatever you want to call it. And they've cleaned this up in some times, you know, they always do this stuff. And they would have an interpreter, because this person would be so, like, you know, wigged out. And they'd have an interpreter who would interpret the words of the Pythus, you know, who's the priestess, if you will. And I guess at times you can't always have a hermaphroditic albino. So you have a priestess, the Pythus, who would repeat, you know, who would say, this is what this is what's going on. And so that would be the oracle. And the oracle would then give the word to Oedipus or whomever it was who had come. And man, they took this very, very seriously, with good reason. Apparently, the Oracle of Delphi was extremely accurate. I love these stories. You know, mythology is incredibly rich. Mythology tells us not only about a culture, but about the people themselves, like the story of Isis and Set and Horus, and about Osiris. I mean, Osiris and Set, well, you know, they're two brothers. They're brothers. And Set is this grumpy, chaotic, but he's nature. And I think to understand why the Egyptians never vilified him, never turned him into this bad guy, it's important to understand what he represents. He represents nature. He represents pure nature. And what Osiris represents is humanity. He represents humanity and order and the fine arts, well, more or less, you know. And he represents culture. So he represents irrigation and farming. And he teaches human beings this. Now, there may have been an historic Osiris. Maybe. And that doesn't matter. That really doesn't matter. What matters is that we talk about Osiris and Set and the fact that Set murdered Osiris. Well, that's the concept of death itself. And he does so through this horrible thing. He has this big party because he's so jealous of him, because everyone worships Osiris. Right? Osiris this, Osiris that, blah, 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 blah. And Set says, I really don't like this guy. I mean, he's my brother. I should love him. And he did really kind of love him. No, he didn't. He really didn't. So he said, bring my denizens of darkness, my minions. And so there's Sobek. And, you know, he gets these, Sobek is the crocodile god. Let's get these guys together. We're going to have this big party on his birthday. Bring him on in. Oh, look, here's this box. This box, if anyone fits in this box perfectly, well then, guess what? He gets it. Now, who might fit in this box? Osiris, it's your birthday. Let's try you in it. So Osiris goes into it. There are varying stories. They jump on the box, blah, 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 and they throw him in the Nile. Right. And he dies. because I like the idea of a cedar box, and then they poison it. I think that would be a just a wonderful way to tell the story, because cedar is aromatic, you know, and cedar is rare and fine, and they used to get their cedar from Byblos, which is Lebanon, and Lebanon had the finest cedar trees that there were, and still they do. And the Egyptians and the Lebanese were huge friends of each other. Huge friends back then. And unfortunately, that whole area is just great honk. It's just a terrible thing now, you know. And soon, maybe it'll be the Riviera of the Middle East in Gaza, and they can all, you know. That's just pure insanity. Insanity. Anyway, back to the story. So it's terrible. Isis is made a widow almost immediately, but she, you see, is very powerful. She's a sorceress, essentially. She's a very powerful woman. And here's the thing about Egyptian mythology. The women are powerful and extremely capable and extremely bright. I love that. There's nothing diminutive about them. As a matter of fact, all they are is we might call them, not the passive, but the, so Osiris's name is Ausar, and what that represents is the throne of power, Ausar. And his wife's name, sister's name, same thing. And we don't get into these horrible, you know, ridiculous ideas of, oh my God, it's his sister. You know, let's not play that game. But her name is Auset, which means the female Osiris. Okay? That's all it means. The female source of power, the female throne of power. And I like that. Set is set. He's a creature that no one knows exactly what he is. It doesn't matter to me. You know, kind of looks like a taper, but where a taper would go, you know, who knows? And his wife's name is Nebhet. And we call her Nephthys because that's what the Greeks kind of came up with. But Nebhet means the lady of the house. The lady of the house, the lord of the house, but the lady of the house. And I love that. She is the goddess of the house. She is, that's her thing. She is the ruler of home, the home itself. And even Set does not say to her, come bring me my dinner. She, you know, he would never think of doing that to her. And so in the mythologies that I believe, they have twin sons, Set and Nebhet, and their twin sons are Anubis, Anpu, that's his name, Anpu, and the Greeks would have said, Anubis, so maybe it was Anub, I can see that name very clearly as an Egyptian, Anub, yeah, and Tut, which is still Tuti to this day, is still, I had an uncle whose name was Talat, and he was a very clever guy. And they still call very clever guys in Egypt Tuti. So Tuti, or as they call, now you hear people calling Thoth Jehuti, but more likely it was probably Tuti. Okay, so Thoth, as we know him, because of the Greek, is the ibis-headed god. To me, these represent the dark moon, Anubis, and the bright moon, Thoth. And we look at goddesses as well, who have lunar attributes. And so these two were the sons of Set and the sons of Nephthys. And so poor Isis and Osiris never had a kid. It happens. There are barren couples. We see it today in huge numbers, incredibly huge numbers. You see it all the time today. As a matter of fact, it's an epidemic of couples who can't have children naturally. So they are going to clinics, right? We'll talk about that in a second. So Isis says he killed my husband. And yet, what does he do? He ascends to the throne, and everyone worships him as the king. because that's how it was done back then, even if it was a dastardly deed like that. Well, Isis says this does not stand. She goes to her nephews, Thoth and Anubis, and says, can you find him? And Anubis says, sure, I can find him. You know, I have an incredible sense of smell. I know right where he threw him in. And you know, not everyone is on the take, so to speak. And they help find him, and they bring his body out. And Set is on. He says, wait a minute, I know what's going on. And he once again finds the body and chops it up into pieces. Chop, chop, chop. And scatters those pieces all over Egypt. Right? And Isis is just crestfallen. Crestfallen. That's it. That's bad. That's no good. That's no good. So she says to Anubis and Thoth, please, can you help me again? Of course. Of course, aunt. Or aunt, if you will. We will do whatever you want us to do. And they begin. And Anubis once again goes about, says, I will help you and do everything I can. And he goes about and begins the process of finding the pieces of his uncle, Osiris. And peace here, peace there. And there are gnomes in Egypt at that time. 43 separate gnomes. And he finds all except one piece. And he can't find it. And so, one piece ends up in Byblos. Byblos. And he says, it is discerned. I can't remember exactly how she finds out where it is. Maybe he tells her, maybe she sees it in a dream, but it's in Byblos, and it's Lebanon. And so she goes there, and it turns out that it's his phallus. It's in a fish. Fish eats it at Elephantine, which is there's a beautiful temple there, the temple of Dendera. You should look it up. It's gorgeous. And there's the only astrological, it was a Greek time, the astrological ceiling there, the temple of Dendera. Oh, it's gorgeous temple. Gorgeous temple. Oh, beautiful temple. You should really look it up. My favorite scarab is on the outside of that temple. I have a little brass rendition of it that I'm going to incorporate. I have it incorporated into some beads I wear, but I think I may do something else with it. I'm not sure yet, but it's absolutely gorgeous. So she goes to Byblos and disguises herself as an old woman. But miraculously, she realizes that there is a prince there. And she says, I would like to be, you need a nursemaid. And they said, oh, you're an old woman. You can't nurse the prince. She said, oh, but I can. I can produce milk. They said, no, you're much too old. She said, no, I can. I can produce milk. And she does. She says, look, I can feed him. Well, she's Isis, you know. She's a goddess. And the reason she's there is because the fish landed upon the shores of Byblos magically in Lebanon, which is quite a trek from Elephantine, which is in the sea. You see, it went to northern Egypt and to the Mediterranean, and that's why Egyptian priests were forbidden from eating fish. That's right, eating fish. So, wonderful story. So, and it landed upon the waters on the shores there, and this huge cedar tree grew. And the king said, this is a miraculous tree. Take this tree and turn it into a pillar, which was in his palace. So that's, ha-ha. And that's where this pillar was, and she knew that it was the phallus of Osiris. Now, they cleaned it up later, of course, when they told the story, and said it was his head. You know, there was a lot of that, especially in Victorian England. But it was his phallus, which was missing because she wanted to do, what did she want to do? Revive him and have a child with him to avenge his death. Because Set was ruling as a dictator, as a tyrant, the way nature does. There was no, I mean, the floods were coming. There was no regaining the land. It was barbarism. It was terrible times. And it wasn't that she was in grief, yes. But more than that, there was, people were dying, and that was just it. There was no afterlife. There was no nothing. Osiris had plans. He had plans for people, you see. So, anyway. So she heard about this. That's how, and I kept come back. That's how she heard about this incredible, and she knew this incredible tree and the pillar. It's coming back now. So she goes and she falls in love with this little prince. And she says, I'm going to make him immortal. And this is where the Greeks took this story, you see, about how every night she would bathe him in a blue flame and fly over him as a sparrow and cry. She would cry as a sparrow. And one day they walk in on her and blah, 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 and they freak out. And she reveals herself as Isis. And they go, great honk, you're a goddess. And she says, yes. They say, what do you want? She said, I want the pillar. They say, fine, take the pillar. She takes the pillar. She goes back. Have you heard of the Jed pillar? Well, now you know. The backbone of Isis, they say, of Osiris, kind of. So she takes it back to Egypt, and that's the missing piece. Anubis takes it. He's embalmed everything else. And when Thoth says the magic words over the body, Osiris is not alive. Kind of he's alive, but he's really not. Now, the Egyptian soul is made up of 9 different parts, right? But there is one part missing, and that is in the underworld. So all she can do is reanimate his body and mate with it. Now, how wild is that story? She mates with it, she conceives a son. And that son is Horus, the falcon-headed god. Right? Falcon-headed god. That's son of Ra, kind of. Ra is the falcon-headed god. And Horus is just normal at the beginning. You know, he's just a kid. But as he gets older, this kind of begins to happen. And of course, Set finds out about it and tries to kill him. Blah, blah, blah. We'll skip all that. He grows up strong and with the falcon head, and he is a solar deity. And eventually he grows up to a pretty strong teen, and he challenges his uncle, the murderer of his father, to a fight. And it is one heck of a fight. What a fight it is! And it lasts 3 days. And in the fight, Set plucks his eye out of his head. Well, that's an eclipse, you see. That's an eclipse. And shortly thereafter, Thoth pulls his eye out of his head. And that's a lunar eclipse. So there's a solar eclipse when Horus loses his eye. And then there's the lunar eclipse when Thoth loses his eye. I love that. That's so what a tremendous story. And we see that in almost every culture. You know, Baldur the Beautiful, who is the solar deity in the in the Norse mythology, that's Baldur the Beautiful. He dies, and that's a solar eclipse. I mean, people are wonderful. The stories they tell are fantastic. Stonehenge predicts eclipses, because you gotta know. When these things are coming, if you're not ready for them, man, these are omens. You don't want to be caught without some knowledge there. So, these big fights, and finally, Horus gets the upper hand, because Set is very, very old. He's nature. He's ancient. And he gets his uncle down on the ground, and on his knees, and he raises his mace over his head to deliver the death blow, and he's got it over his head, and he's about to smash his skull to pieces, and Isis raises her hand and tells him, stop. And he looks at her and he says, what? She says, stop. She says, compassion. You must not hurt him. He is your uncle. Let him live. And Horus simply drops the mace, picks his uncle up, and hugs him. and shows him compassion and love. And they have a big banquet that night. A big banquet. Laughing, hugging, kissing, joyousness. And Horus, I'm going to say this, and this is going to sound weird, but these are ancient Egyptians. I didn't write it. Horus ejaculates into his uncle's salad, and his uncle gives birth to the four children of Horus, and that's where they come from, okay? The four children of Horus. That's it. And, oh, Duamutef, Chepsenuf, Imti, and I don't remember the last one. One has the head one has a head like Anubis, the head of a man, the head of a falcon, and the other one head of, I don't remember, but they're used in the canopic jars in mummification. And one holds the lungs, one holds the stomach, one holds, lungs, did I say that? The liver, and the one holds the stomach. And so, I mean, the story is fantastic, but what does that tell you about a people who, after that sort of trauma, Isis says, you must show compassion? How far out is that? They're hippies, you know? They're peace-loving people. Do not kill your own kind. There's a story out there about the first war of Egyptian versus Egyptian. And that was way, 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 way back at the beginning of Egyptian history. And that was that the South and the North fought each other. And it was a massacre. It was the worst calamity that Egyptians had ever seen. And it was so many of them died. So many Egyptians died that there was just a huge wailing and gnashing of teeth. And you know how many died? 60 people. 60 people died that they vowed that they would never fight each other again. And they never did. Imagine that, a time on this planet when 60 people died and they said, we can never do this again. Imagine that. What is the beauty of that? What is the wonder of that? And they were a united nation after that, till today. You know? I mean, there's something beautiful about that. The mythology of a people will tell you who they are. They will tell you just about everything you need to know about them. Greek mythology is a lot about philandering, if you look at it, you know? And if you look at Greek mythology, it really is beautiful. There is a beauty to it, but you also learn not to mess with Greek women, because Hera is extremely vindictive, and she doesn't just go after the poor, innocent women that Zeus went after and created heroes with, but she goes after their entire lineage for the rest of time. And you realize that is, I mean, it's just so sad. And the payback, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. And greed. It really does reflect human nature so beautifully. The stories of greed, like the Minotaur. The Minotaur is such a curse upon the island of Crete because of the greed of King Minos. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Everyone pays in that one because Minos is so greedy. He refuses to sacrifice the bull that Poseidon gives him. All Poseidon wants is the bull back. I'm going to give you this bull, make you the king over your brothers. Give me the bull back. You know, comes out of the sea, this white, beautiful white bull. Give me the bull back. Sacrifice it to me back, and you're fine. You're the king. Everything's good. He doesn't do it. He gives him a false bull. You don't fool Poseidon, just like you don't fool Hades, and you don't fool Zeus. They're gods. They're deities. These stories reveal the truth about humanity. Really, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but is there any modern religion that maybe the books of modern religion do reveal human nature, but people don't follow them? They don't pay attention to them. If they did, they wouldn't act the way they do. I maintain, they just don't pay attention to them. They don't. You have these books, these good holy books. Do they really pay attention to the stories? You got me. Do you know what Persephone means? Okay, so there's this girl named Kore, right? And she's abducted by Hades because she's so pretty. She's living with her mom, Demeter, on the earth, you know? And boom, up from the bowels of the earth comes Hades. And he abducts her and he takes her below. And he, you know, he has this way with her and she eats the seeds, blah, 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 blah. But she becomes Persephone. And she ends up loving it down there. She is a dreaded queen. She doesn't regret being down there. He's even afraid of her. He's afraid of her because she is the queen down there. So we mustn't feel sorry for her. That is part of the myth, is that she is the queen of the underworld down there, and she is as tough as nails, you know. I mean, when Orpheus goes down there, Hades cries tears of iron. Oh, God, I love that. That is such a fantastic thing. He cries tears of iron. Oh, my God. She doesn't. She doesn't. Orpheus, that poor guy. Oh, what a story. That's part of the hermit card in Crowley's Tarot. Orpheus, the story of Orpheus, the musician who was so incredible at his art that he was doomed, right? He falls in love with, you know, Eurydice. And she dies. She's stung by the scorpion. It's in the sky, you know. It's in the sky. That scorpion up there gets a lot of bad rep. My full moon in Scorpio. I have a full moon in Scorpio. In both systems, Vedic and Western. And Terry's the red star. By the way, let's talk about the red stars. There are two stars that oppose each other in the sky. And Terry's, which means not Mars, right? Because Mars can go through, they're more or less close. And so Antares means not Mars. They want you to know that. And then on the other side of the sky, in the winter, you can see Aldebaran, which is a red star in Taurus. And Aldebaran is in Taurus, and it's this red star that forms the bullseye. And that is why they call that red star, that's why they call that central thing in a dartboard the bullseye. Ta and da. How's that? I love that bit of trivia. That's why they call it that. They used to call it the bunghole. And no, it's not what you think. The bunghole used to be in a keg. They would call that little cork area. And yes, it was named ultimately after that. And some people still call that area that thing, a bunghole. But that's a different story on a different station at a different time of day. But I love these stories. So the scorpion, I mean, you look at the sky, and when you see if you've never seen the constellation of Scorpio, boy, oh boy, oh boy, you really should sometime. It's in the summertime that you can see it the best. So you should see it. I was born in May, and the full moon was right there. And you can see it in the springtime, see it in the summer. It's a remarkable thing to see. It looks just exactly like what it is. That's all there is to it. It looks like a scorpion. And you can't mistake it for anything else. There are some things in the sky like Osiris. Yeah, I think that's what it looks like. Orion. It's a guy walking across the sky. And it has the brightest star in the sky following it, and that is the dog star, Sirius, or Sopdet to the ancient Egyptians. He's being followed by a dog. It's the brightest star in the sky, other than our sun. But it's the brightest star in the sky. And it's a dog. And my God, there's something so beautiful about that. So beautiful about a dog following this guy. Because, I mean, my dog. I love my dog so much. And she loves me. Oh, trust me. She's a pain in the wazoo. She grabs the remote control, which I am not allowed to touch. I haven't touched a remote control in 31 years. I don't know how to use it. I wouldn't know what to do with it, except worship it as a sacred item, because I don't do it, you know. But that's fine, you know. I just gives me more time to, you know, just kind of study and do my... Boy, am I studying things. Oh, my God. I looked at like 5 or 6 different shorthand techniques, something called Easy Script, and I thought, nah. Something called Mini Script, and I thought, eh. I looked at, you know, T-Line, and I went, oh, my God, it's not pretty. It's not pretty. It's what journalists use. And I thought, not so pretty, you know. I want it to be pretty good. I'm back to Greg. Greg shorthand is really, it's very fluid, and it's like cursive. And it's, and I really have learned that writing it and reading it are two different parts of the brain. And so I have to work more on reading it, because I can write it fluidly and make it look pretty, but going back and reading it isn't always the easiest thing, you know. So I'll get to the grocery store, and it's like, what? Most of it I can get. And there's that one thing, and you go, what is that, you know? But I love it, because it sharpens the brain. And I feel... Like I said, there's something that's happened. I know we sound a little manic today, but I feel really pretty good. Really pretty good. Yesterday, I wasn't feeling so great. It's like, I can't believe he's gone, my friend. And then you just say, yeah, he is. And then you just say, okay, I'm going to get through this. I know that because, well, it's reality. And I've always been one for reality. Not everyone I know has been. That's just the truth. And I like to face truth. I prefer truth to fantasy. I prefer truth to anything else, regardless of how truth hurts. And who knows? I'll find something out that'll go, oh, because in the past I've always had those ohs. Other people have had, oh. But I've lost a lot of friends, but I'm blessed with a long life so far. And I hope it's a lot longer, a lot, lot, lot longer. I have a lot I want to do yet, and that sounds selfish, but I'm going to be selfish. There's a lot I want to do. I want to write a couple of books. I'm pretty lazy, that I know about myself. But I'm lazy because I'm doing lots of other weird stuff too, you know. I love energy. I love being in my head and letting the weird cartoons that run around in there run around. There's so much to do, friends. Life is joyous. I'm going to say it again. Life is joyous. It's fun. It's dynamic. I haven't been bored in a long, long, long time. As a kid, I would get bored. My mom would say, "You're bored? I'll give you something to be bored about." You know, and she would, you know, it'd be like, okay, go pull weeds. That was boring. What was not boring was reading Harlan Tarbell's Encyclopedia of Magic. You know, sleight of hand stuff. That was never boring. What was not boring was reading the encyclopedia, which I loved to do. Even if I didn't understand what I was reading, sometimes I would come upon something, it would be just like, wow, this is incredible, you know? What's not boring is talking to people. What's not boring is being here. The colors of life. The amazing aspect of just the electricity of love. Love. I love love. If you've never heard the soundtrack to Hair, 1968, get some beads, put them over your head. At Bill's funeral, they gave out incense burners, little wooden incense burners, and they bought 1,000 sticks of Nag Champa. He got it from me because I was always burning Nag Champa. I don't do it anymore. I figure it's like smoking cigarettes for a long time. I don't do it anymore because I cough when I smell the stuff. But I could smell, you know, I picked some up and gave it to my son. He was with me. God bless him. God bless everybody. But it was wonderful. And I used to, I mean, it was just the time, you know, incense, peppermints, cripple mankind. That's not how the goes next, but that's in there. But do listen to Hair and listen to it without a jaded thought. And Broadway. No, don't listen to the movie version. Listen to the Broadway, original Broadway cast. When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, forget about that stuff. I mean, it is astrological, but don't try and analyze that. Just listen to it and think about love and peace. And try and put yourself at a time when there was war in the world. Geez, it should be easy. And when peace and harmony were really the goal. And think of an old man sitting in front of a microphone who loves you. That would be me. I'm not that old. Not in spirit. Peace and love, my friends. Until next week, and I will be here. I feel so good. And it's so good to talk to you. Peace and love, my friends. Peace and love. Till next week.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Moe, and this is the Paisley Penny Arcade. And if you've never been here before, welcome. And if you've been here before, welcome, welcome. Come on in, have a seat. There are beanbag chairs everywhere. There are big, fluffy, puffy chairs everywhere. There are leather recliners everywhere. They're pleather. Please don't get bent out of shape there. There are all sorts of, or do get bent out of shape if that's what suits you. Some people like being bent out of shape a little bit. There are chairs of every kind. There's all sorts of things going on here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. There's Paisleys everywhere. They're floating around. Grab one. Put it in your hand. Let it rotate a little bit. Look at it. Changes colors before your very eyes. That's the nature of the place. It changes as you sit. It's filled with grit and wit and a little bit of spunk, you know, energy, grit, whatever. Grits. I like grits. Used to eat grits in the South. I'm not sure I've had grits since. My goodness, it's been a long time since I've had grits. You can buy it in the store, you know. I guess that's me talking to me. Hello. First of all,